Hello, everyone. Welcome to English Digest. We've got a juicy question of the month for you today. Lots of interesting ideas. And today's topic, Planet of the Humans. Why haven't apes evolved into humans? Today, of course, is July 2nd, and this will be a one-day unit. So just a little quick flash in the pan here to look a little sampling of evolutionary theory and also a little bit of cinema history dealing with Planet of the Apes. But before we do that, let's find out who's here today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Francoise.
And I am Ian. All right. So today, Planet of the Humans, well, this is supposed to evoke, of course, the fabulous classic science fiction movie, Planet of the Apes. Now, have you seen Planet of the Apes, Francoise?
Oh, I certainly have. My father absolutely loves Planet of the Apes. It's probably one of his all-time favorite movies.
I'd have to agree with him as well. It is one of my all-time favorite movies as well. Now, the original Planet of the Apes movie came out in the late 60s featuring Charlton Heston, that great swashbuckling hero of a past generation. But it's recently been redone, isn't that correct?
Yeah, it has. It was redone, I think, about 2 years ago.
Right. Tim Burton was directing that one, the guy who did such movies as Batman and Nightmare Before Christmas. And this was apparently much closer to the original novel. Now, Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark, was starring in this movie. So what we're talking about here is going to be some of the ideas that could be inspired by the movie Planet of the Apes.
Well, in Planet of the Apes, there was an astronaut who lands on a planet where all of the apes are human-like, right?
Exactly. They're human-like, but the humans cannot speak. At least that's in the original version. I believe in the updated version, the humans can speak. The trick is that human and ape roles have been reversed in the original Planet of the Apes movies.
Right. And that's where the astronaut, he meets a bunch of humans and they can't speak at all. And he's really confused and they catch him, right? And the apes take him to their village. And there he finds what it's like to be a slave to these monkey kings, basically.
Right. So it's sort of a metaphor for the way humans now treat animals, apes, and all animals that are below us in what we believe to be an evolutionary sense. But that's the theme today. The topic today is going to be how evolutionary theory works out. Now, just another quick little note here about Planet of the Apes. The original Planet of the Apes movie, the screenplay was written by the late, great Rod Serling. Now, Rod Serling is famous for an American TV show called The Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone was a brilliant, brilliant TV series that ran for about 5 years that featured quite a few surreal and thought-provoking television shows, things that would happen, what we would call magic realism, where it's supposed to be real life, but something mysterious happens. Did you watch Twilight Zone as a kid?
Well, I did, and Twilight Zone continues to be a popular show even today. They still show the old series in syndication.
Right, and it's one of the classic moments would be when Rod Serling himself, the creator or the writer, would walk into the scene as sort of an invisible guest and comment on the story that was going on. And he had sort of a wry drawl to his voice and would stand there with smoking a cigarette and talking about today's episode.
Well, so what does this all have to do with evolution? I mean, today we're talking about Planet of the Humans. Why haven't apes evolved into humans? So do you think it's possible? Is this like asking, is it possible for Planet of the Apes to really happen?
Well, I think that's basically the idea, is to look at the original movie of the Planet of the Apes and to think about the ideas on evolution that are sort of tacitly or unspoken presented in that movie, and to see, you know, do they cut the mustard? Does it work scientifically? It sure works as a story, but does it work scientifically?
All right. Well, another thing I think we should maybe talk about before we really get into this dialogue and try and figure out what it all means is evolution. And evolution, of course, is the idea that was put forward by Charles Darwin in the mid-19th century. And it's the idea that everything on Earth has evolved from a common ancestor.
Right. And Darwin first picked up on these ideas when he was a young man traveling in the South Pacific near the coast of South America and saw some very isolated islands, the Galapagos Islands, and saw how the animals there differed from those on the mainland. And he came up with this theory, you know, that we all go back to these basic ancestors and that we descended and changed through time. How do we change? Well, we are chosen by the environment. The environment chooses you by letting you live or by not letting you live, basically.
Well, exactly. If the environment is really cold and I had a lot of fur on my body, I would survive better than an animal that didn't have a lot of fur on its body. And so therefore, I would continue to live and I would make babies and the one without fur would die. And that's basically the central idea of evolutionary theory.
Basically. And it gets much more complicated once it gets into how that actually happens, how that interaction happens. But what we're looking at today is, why haven't apes evolved into humans? So humans are here. Humans are obviously more advanced than apes from an evolutionary perspective. Why isn't it that apes are not becoming humans now? So please, if you have the opportunity, and we hope you do, open up your magazine at home or wherever you happen to be listening from and listen to us as we read through this together.
Virginia and her guest, Johnson, have just watched Planet of the Apes on DVD.
Apes that evolve into something human-like? Pretty unlikely, methinks.
Definitely. Evolution within a species or family of species did not have to increase in complexity.
Right. If it did, every fish in the ocean would now have limbs and live on land.
Exactly. Because countless ecological opportunities remained for fish underwater, plenty of them remained aquatic.
Another thing. The most developed species, like humans and apes, are products of a very specific combination of selection pressures and genetic mutations over millions of years. There's no reason why such a combination will repeat itself.
Right. Planet of the Apes simply exploits the fallacy that present-day apes are traveling down the same evolutionary path as ourselves.
When it's widely accepted among scientists that at some point, 5 to 8 million years ago, humans and apes diverged to form the two separate species we know today.
Yeah. As descendants of a common ancestor, apes are our evolutionary cousins.
The main bone of contention remaining among the boffins is which species in the fossil record is the so-called missing link.
What, John, say? Virginia, not understand.
Okay, we ended on a little joke there. Who is the missing link? It sounds like Françoise today, or Virginia, the character she's playing. She's the missing link today. All right, let's take a look at this line by line and see what's going on. Starting out with the introduction, it says, Virginia and her guest Johnson. So we have two people. One is Virginia. Obviously, she is the host. And her guest, Johnson, are hanging out together, and they've just watched a DVD. And what is the DVD? Planet of the Apes.
Right. Well, and also, you know, another thing we should point out about guest is that guest here sounds to me a little bit like a euphemism. It sounds like a word that we use because we don't want to say something that's maybe less polite for polite company.
Right, like her boyfriend.
Exactly.
Or something to that
effect. Maybe she had somebody over and you know, they were watching a movie. Maybe there was a little bit of hanky-panky going on. So instead of describing him as her boyfriend, here we can say, oh, he's her guest.
Another polite way of saying that would be her gentleman friend. There's an old expression for you. All right, well, what does Johnson say? Maybe they've got different things on their mind other than evolutionary theory, but they're discussing it, so obviously they know a fair amount about it anyways. Johnson says, as in a thinking moment there, right? I'm thinking. Apes that evolve into something human-like. Now, human-like here, of course, is the adjective, so human-like, like a human, basically. We put them together to create a new adjective, a new sort of compound adjective. Well, apes that evolve into something human-like. Now, he's got a question mark here, so he is asking a question, but this is sort of a rhetorical question. I mean, he knows sort of the answer, but it's like, I'm kind of confused, right? And then he answers it himself. He says, pretty unlikely, methinks. Now, you'll notice methinks there. What is this methinks? You're thinking, does this break all the rules of grammar? No, it is just an archaic form of I think. Now, we wouldn't usually use this in daily conversation, but for joking around, this is the sort of language that might have appeared in Shakespeare's day. Methinks thou art splendid today, for example. That would be sort of a Shakespearean kind of phrase. So this is just a sort of joking around line evoking an old style of speaking English.
Right. Well, and Virginia goes on to say, well, definitely. She definitely thinks that this is unlikely. It's not really possible that a monkey is going to just suddenly evolve into a human. She thinks that this whole idea is probably not possible. Then she goes on to explain why. She says evolution within a species or a family of species does not have to increase in complexity. Okay, now this is one of the key points of evolutionary theory. Basically, what she's saying is that within a species, so for example, dogs are one species and cats are another species. So within the species of dogs, maybe they will evolve, but they're not necessarily going to become more complicated animals with every evolutionary step that they take. It's not like the dog's brain is going to suddenly grow bigger and its teeth are going to grow longer. It will only do that if the environment means that it's necessary for it to happen.
Right. And the key point here is if the adaptation, if that which would allow a species to survive was to not increase in complexity, but rather to become more basic in some ways, that is the move that evolution would necessarily take. It's really what allows you to stay alive is the key point here. Now, often that's to increase in complexity, or that's how we tend to interpret it, humans being at the top of this scale, the ones who formulated the theory, but it doesn't have to happen that way all the time. And of course, it's not the case that a specific individual evolves. It's only a behavior that we see over time. Specific individuals are what they are. They were born with a code. But whether they pass that on or not, well, that's the process of evolution, right? Well, Johnson agrees. He says, right, I gotcha. That's correct. If it did, every fish in the ocean would now have limbs and live on land. Well, we know that all the living beings on the Earth today started out in the oceans, in the cradle of the oceans, and gradually some of those fish or some of those fish-like objects developed limbs, their fins started to get more like arms and legs, and they left the ocean, maybe part-time. Later on, it started to be full-time. But if everything on the planet was evolving in the same direction, there'd be no fish. They would all live on land. Well, that's just not the case. So not every single member of every single species is evolving towards a similar state like humans.
So then here, this if it did means that if it did have to increase in complexity, right?
Exactly. I think that's exactly what's implied here.
Okay. And limbs? What are limbs?
Ah, limbs, yes. Limb is a generic word like appendages. There's another word for you. Limbs and appendages refer to your arms and your legs.
So, for example, I could say I have never broken any limbs because I've never broken my arms or broken my legs.
Exactly. So limbs refer to arms and legs. I mentioned another word earlier on, appendage. I'll spell that one for you, everybody out there. Appendage is A-P-P-E-N-D-A-G-E, appendage. Now, limbs are appendages, but appendages are not limbs. An appendage is anything that comes off a body. Now, this could be a human arm, a dog's leg, a horse's leg, an elephant's trunk, or a fish's fin. Anything that comes off a body and serves as an organ of manipulation, that is to move things, or locomotion, that is to push your body somewhere, those are appendages. But limbs, that refers pretty much to us kind of mammalian creatures who have arms and legs.
Okay, well, let's look at the dialogue again. Virginia's next line, she says, exactly, she's agreeing with Johnson. She says, right, if this were true, then every fish would now be living on land. And it's not true, so you are correct. Exactly. She goes on to say, because countless ecological opportunities remained for fish underwater, plenty of them remained aquatic. So this is basically saying that the environment in the water, the environment underwater, is still very comfortable for fish. There's still lots of things for them to do. There are ecological opportunities. That means there's food for them to eat. They're well adapted so that they can breathe underwater. There are hiding places where they can hide from their enemies. Basically, there are no problems with the environment that they're living in. And because there are no problems, they're not going to evolve. They're going to remain aquatic, which means that they will stay animals that live underwater, aquatic animals.
Right. The key thing to remember here, of course, is opportunity, a place to live, food, shelter. Why did fish first leave water in the first place? Well, probably because there was a great deal of competition. Maybe the oceans were getting a little full. So some of these fish, proto-land animals, proto, P-R-O-T-O, meaning before or the ancestor of these proto-land animals, they left the ocean because there were no ecological opportunities or less ecological opportunities. Well, they left the land just because some of them left, not left the land, they left the water. Just because some of them left the water does not mean that they will all leave the water, right? This only applies to groups or parts of the groups. It does not apply to every individual.
So I guess maybe the time might come when humans might be adapted to the water because the air that we live in is going to be too polluted and we won't be able to breathe it anymore. I can imagine that something like that might happen. Like if the environment in the land became so terrible that there were no more ecological opportunities, it might be possible that land animals will once again return to the water.
Right. And that story has in fact happened where land animals return to the water. All of the water mammals, every mammal that lives in the water, so that includes whales and dolphins, were originally land animals. Mammals evolved on the land and then returned to the water. Seals, otters, all those kinds of animals. So at one point, a long, long, long time ago, there was a mammal who lived on the land that looked something like, or was something like, what modern-day whales are like. And eventually, they found the land was getting a little crowded, so they found their own ecological opportunities back in the water. Certainly it's possible from an evolutionary perspective for a land animal to go back to the water. Now, before we can come back to our topic, we need to take a short break. We'll be back after this short music break. Hello, Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's still July 2nd, of course, and we're looking at the second half of our dialogue, Planet of the Humans. Sorry, that was my Planet of the Ape voice there. All right. What does Johnson say in response to Virginia? He says, another thing. Okay, this is a short form of saying, I have another thing to say, or I have another point that agrees with you. But he says it in a short format. Another thing. Another thing, the most developed species, like humans and apes, are products of a very specific combination of selection pressures and genetic mutations over millions of years. Ooh, that's a mouthful. Let's take a look at that in little bits. Okay, the most developed species, the most advanced species, right? Humans and apes, we know we are that, are products. That means product here is like outcome or what happens because of many things, okay? When you have a factory, you create products. Well, we could look at nature as the factory in this case. What's the product? Well, humans and apes are the end product, along with many other things. So, but how did this product come out? Well, it came about from a combination, very specific combination, which means not any combination, pretty much only one possible combination of selection pressures and genetic mutation. Okay, what are selection pressures? According to the theory of evolution, there are two things that cause changes in a species. We mentioned one before, selection pressures. So if you live in a cold climate and you have fur, you tend to live and you can pass on your genes. So furry people get more popular, or furry beings get to be more popular in that group. That's one way that evolution continues, by pressure of the environment. The other way is genetic mutation. Well, we reproduce sexually. We pass genes back and forth. That's how evolution works. And when that happens, there are occasional mutations. They come about in a couple of different ways. One can be through chemical or radioactive influence on our genes, right? So if our genes get a little mucked up by chemicals or the sun's radiation, and also there are just natural mutations as well. Sometimes there are accidents when genes are getting swapped over in the reproductive process. So there are the two ways that evolution progresses, selection pressure, genetic mutation. And of course, this happens not in 2 years, 5 years, or 10 years, but millions and millions of years. So this combination of pressures and mutation happens over millions of years. And then he continues, there's no reason why such a combination will repeat itself. So one way of looking at it is that human life is a unique outcome. It's a unique thing that happened because of some very special circumstances. Would it necessarily happen again? There's no reason why it should. Although it is possible, it is not necessary, as watching Planet of the Apes might suggest.
Okay, so basically, if I had a baby and my baby was born with, let's say, an ability to fly, my baby was born with wings, that would be a genetic mutation, and it would probably be a pretty useful kind of genetic mutation because, you know, being able to fly would make me that much better, or would make my baby that much stronger and able to compete against all the other babies that much better, right?
Absolutely. Didn't that happen to Dumbo the elephant?
Oh, exactly. So Dumbo the elephant would be just like my baby then. And my baby, because of this genetic mutation, would be better adapted to its environment. So the selection pressures wouldn't affect it quite as strongly because it would have these wings and it could fly above the predators. And then my baby would have other babies with wings, and eventually all humans would have wings, right?
Wow, I want a pair of wings right now.
Yeah, well, that would be pretty cool. Okay, well, let's look at Virginia's next line. She says, right, Planet of the Apes simply exploits the fallacy that present-day apes are traveling down the same evolutionary path as ourselves. Now, a fallacy is something that people believe that is not true. So Planet of the Apes, the movie, is exploiting or is taking advantage of the wrong idea that present-day apes are traveling on the same evolutionary path as ourselves. So this means that basically the apes are following in the footsteps of humans, which just isn't true. I mean, humans have become humans the way that we are today because of, like we said before, the unique circumstances of the environment and of genetic mutations that created who we are. But apes are not going to follow the exact same path. They're living in a very different world than the world that early humans lived in maybe 30,000 years ago.
Right, exactly. Now, a fallacy here is a common and an engaging wrong way of thinking. I'm just going to mention one other fallacy here because it's a common one. There's a fallacy called the gambler's fallacy. The gambler's fallacy suggests if you like to play the lottery out there, you think, okay, last week the number 50 showed up in the lottery, so this week I cannot choose the number 50. This, of course, is the gambler's fallacy because there's no reason why just because a number was chosen last week, it would not happen again this week. There's a very common way of thinking, though, and very compelling. So fallacies are these sorts of things we have to think very carefully to escape from. And the fallacy in evolutionary thinking is that everybody is moving towards humans, which is just not the case. Well, let's look at the next line from Johnson. He says, when it's widely accepted among scientists that at some point, 5 to 8 million years ago, humans and apes diverged to form the two separate species we know today. The apes that we know in the present day today are not the same apes that we diverged from in that past time. That was an earlier species, maybe similar to modern-day apes, but an earlier species. And in the same way that humans have been evolving, apes have been evolving. Now, species do separate. One group of species separate for lots and lots of reasons, which we cannot possibly get into right now. Geography is usually the basic one. We mentioned Charles Darwin earlier on and his trip to the Galapagos Islands. Now, he noticed the animals on those islands were kind of bizarre, had unique abilities. Why? Because they were geologically isolated from animals that were similar to it at some point in the past. All right, so that's one of the means by which species diverged. So it's widely accepted. That means most people agree that 5 to 8 million years ago, humans and apes diverged. Why 5 to 8 million? Well, because the evolutionary record is not totally clear. We have a rough idea. We have lots of good indications and lots of clues. But, you know, it's pretty hard to dig for things that old. We do find some things. Archaeologists have a fair knowledge, but they don't have a perfect knowledge. And the beauty of archaeology, or paleontology in this case, which is even older than archaeology, is that the story keeps getting rewritten. People have an idea, they think they know what's going on, and then, hey, boom, somebody finds a new set of bones. It changes the whole story. It's quite exciting.
Okay, well, Virginia's next line basically agrees with Johnson's line, and she says, yeah, as descendants of a common ancestor, apes are evolutionary cousins. So rather than being like brothers and sisters, we're like cousins. Like, we had an ancestor in the past, but since then our families have branched off and we're now two separate families. We don't have the same kinds of characteristics as we did back when we had the same ancestor 5 to 8 million years ago.
Exactly. So it's not that apes are our brothers and sisters in an evolutionary sense. They're cousins because they're separate. They're a different line. They're more distant from us, right? Another way of seeing apes, some people would picture apes as our evolutionary ancestors, as our fathers and grandfathers and mothers and grandmothers. And that's not true either.
Yeah, well, that's not true, of course, because the apes themselves have changed since the time when they were our fathers and grandfathers. Maybe 5 to 8 million years ago, an ape was our grandfather or grandmother. But since that time, that grandfather or grandmother had many, many, many children. And the apes that we see today are like the descendants of that. And they're very different from that original ancestor.
Right. That's exactly the way it works. And Johnson goes on to talk about what the scientists are focusing on now. Now, of course, scientists here being paleontologists, being archaeologists, and a number of other people who are trying to figure out this evolutionary story. Who comes first, who comes second, and how did it all change over time? He says, the main bone of contention remaining among the boffins is which species in the fossil record is the so-called missing link. So a bone of contention is when you need to argue about something. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like the problem, the main problem remaining. Like, for example, if I was having a business meeting and I was talking to my coworkers and we were trying to agree on something and we'd agreed on almost everything. Let's say we had to plan a conference. We agreed on everything about the conference, but we still couldn't agree on what hotel to host our visiting guests in. So that would be our main bone of contention, is which hotel should we rent.
Good. Okay. Now, boffins here, this is an unusual word. Boffin is sort of a slang term. It started out apparently in and around the Second World War, and it was referring to military scientists, military researchers. Now, however, the word boffin can more generally be sort of a joking term or a colloquial term for research scientists. That's what boffin means here. So the bone of contention among the boffins, or the thing that research scientists are disagreeing on, basically, is which species in the fossil record is the missing link. So the fossil record are all the fossils that we know of in scientific literature going back. They've been dated, where they were found, what they looked like, all that kind of stuff. So-called, when we use the expression so-called, it puts the following expression in doubt. So in other words, perhaps there is a missing link, perhaps there isn't a missing link. This sentence suggests that this is the way we're discussing it at the moment, but maybe there's a better way of discussing it. But at this point, people are looking for a species to explain or describe an in-between step between ancient apes and modern humans. And as yet, we don't know what that is. We just haven't found those bones yet.
Right. Well, I know that they've found lots of skeletons, and some of them appear a lot like humans, and some of them appear a lot like apes, but they haven't found the one that makes them both together, the missing link. Okay, Virginia's last line, then, is exploiting this joke, and she says, "What John say? Virginia not understand." Of course, if you read this, you know that this is not correct English. It's not good grammar. And she is making a joke and suggesting that she is perhaps the missing link.
All right. Well, we don't want you to miss our next link. We'll be right back for the sentence of the day.
Sentence for the day.
Hello, welcome back, everybody. Time for the sentence of the day. Francoise, can you read our sentence of the day for us?
This is something to go ape over.
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, 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 ha. Right. Well, going ape over something means go crazy for it. Like, you get really crazy and excited about this particular thing. So this issue is very contentious. Everybody is disagreeing about what it means. It's something to go ape over.
Now, we usually go ape over something more pop cultural, like music or a movie or something like that, because to go ape is to act in a very excited and sort of irrational manner. But we hope you go ape over tomorrow's lesson as well, but you'll have to join us that time, next time. Until then, we hope you've enjoyed today's lesson explaining a little bit on evolutionary theory and how it interacts with the great classic cinema of Planet of the Apes. Well, we hope you've enjoyed it, and we will see you later. Until then, my name is Ian.
I'm Francoise.
See you next time.
Goodbye.